Hey, it's Jacqueline Kinsman. Long time no speak. No listen. No speak at you. You know what I'm trying to say. It's been a minute. So let's play some catch up. So last time you heard from me, we were talking about the Wheel of Fortune. We went through the Wheel of Fortune, and I've got a really great episode for us this coming week in Justice. I'm super excited. It's an interview with my very good friend, Anthony. I'm so excited for you guys to get to listen to him talk about tarot, and it was a blast to get to do the episode. And I've been bummed because it's been recorded since before we moved. Like, I think like 2 weeks before we moved, Anthony and I got on Zoom and recorded this episode. And then I was like, hey, we're packing up our studio tomorrow. So I don't know when we're going to get this done, but it'll be as soon as we can get organized and set up at the house. And everyone has been so nice and gracious and patient waiting for Gabe and I to get our shit together. But yeah, so there we go. Just excited for this episode. I want to catch up on current events. I'm not going to harp on a bunch of stuff, but I am just going to kind of tap on a bunch of stuff that has just been happening, you know, overall. So, of course, we have the genocide happening in Palestine. We have a genocide happening in Congo. We have a genocide happening in Myanmar. All of these things deserve our equal attention. They are all awful and horrific and involve real people suffering real tragedies, real horror, day-to-day horror. And I think it's just really important that we keep our eyes and our ears and our hearts, like basically having the heart of humanitarians in this sense, looking at people as people and seeing where and what we can do and how we can support people suffering. There's also a war happening in Ukraine. I also want to take a second and talk about the fact that this last week, Russia experienced one of the most violent terror attacks it has in a very long time. There's some confusion as to who committed the attack. Russia will say one thing. ISIS has claimed responsibility for it. Supposedly, the U.S. had given intel to Russia that this was something that was being planned, and I don't think much was done to prevent it. ISIS, again, has claimed responsibility for the attack. But, you know, like, it was, I believe, at a concert hall in Russia. It started out with the with shooting people, and then eventually the roof caught fire, and it was a mass casualty event. And it's an incredibly sad thing, and unfortunately, there's a lot of miscommunication and a lot of confusion coming out in the news about it. So there's just a lot happening in the world right now that's hard, and it's sad, and it's a struggle, and situations are nuanced, and I think it's just really important to keep that in mind. Here in the U.S., we're still like careening towards primary, so make sure we're thinking about what exactly we want to do and vote for in the upcoming elections. Who are we going to vote for? What are the things that are important to us? How are we going to get to the polls? Are we going to early vote? Are we registered? And then, of course, like, if we have the ability to, it's an extreme privilege to just say, I'm going to go vote. So also, if you have the ability and the time to help other people make plans for how they're going to vote, please do so. Saying that we just need to go vote is very important, but it's also a privilege take because not everybody has cars, not everybody has the means to stand in line. So we do know that voter suppression is a rampant and terrible thing that happens in the U.S. And so it's just something that we need to be like kind of cognizant of as we move and shoot towards the primaries. It's been a month, so a lot has happened in the news, and I don't want to like overwhelm us here in the current event section because this is going to be a longer episode because Gabriel's also going to have stars and shit at the end. So I think just really excited to kind of be back and get the ball rolling on things. Excited for this interview that I had with Anthony, just an absolute gem. And I loved every single second of our conversation, and every time we talk is amazing. So I'm excited for you guys to get to hear the episode. I'm trying to think if I missed anything. I'm a little fuzzy headed because I had to take a Benadryl because I accidentally caught breakfast. Well, I didn't catch breakfast on fire. Breakfast survived. I did a good job cooking, but there was something in like the coil on the stove and it caught fire while I was cooking, and I breathed in all this smoke, which is bad for my lungs. So I had to take 2 Benadryl, and Gabe was like, you should go record current events. And I was like, okay. So that's where we're at. Love you all. Happy to be back, and enjoy the episode.
Oh, okay. She didn't count. Sometimes she counts. Hey, okay. That's how we're starting this episode. This is Jacqueline, obviously. I have a guest with me today. I'm so excited. I'm gonna let them introduce themselves in just a second. But this is somebody that is on my Patreon that I've had like the absolute privilege of like getting to read tarot scopes for, which basically just means I know everything about you, but you don't know that. But also just like having the privilege to be friends with and talk to, and I just have so much love. Do you wanna? Okay, you introduce yourself. You can say. All right. Ignore the ghost in the back of the room here. Introduce yourself.
Hello.
You guys don't know this, but somebody just opened the fucking door in the back. Like, I don't even think I saw Gabe. Like, I don't know what just happened.
It was all very fast.
Well, anyway, so this is Anthony. Anthony, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Anthony. I'm Anthony Fasico.
And so we met through the podcast through Patreon, when you joined, and then I got to do all your tarot scopes. But like, I know a little bit of how you got started with tarot. That's my cat doing weird shit back here. I don't know. Actually, I think well, that's not true. I know that you've been going to classes. I know that you've been reading tarot for a minute, but talk to us more about where you started with tarot, how you got into it, and what that journey's kind of looked like for you up till now.
So I think I picked up my first tarot deck when I was in like junior high. I
I
just picked it up at
forgot
like, yeah,
that you're
Amazon,
like
or not
50.
Amazon, but Barnes and Noble. I think I went shopping with my grandma and I was like, I want that. Don't know what it is, but I want it and I'm
Your
taking
grandma said yes.
it. Yes. I have no idea what I'm buying you, but I'll buy it for you.
I'm obsessed. So you got, was it the Barnes and Noble tarot deck? Like the little purple thing and like the little weird book box? Because that was my first tarot deck.
No, so mine was it's like a Necronomicon one. It's like super dark and like, yeah. I no idea what drew me to it, but that's the first deck that I bought.
And grandma was like, yes.
Yeah. Very Catholic grandma was like, this is fine. Go
Love this
with
one. I'm obsessed with that. So how long did you like, what was your journey with getting to know that deck and using it then?
So I just kind of messed around with it and did readings, take just essentially using the booklet that came with the deck to kind of familiarize myself with like what the cards were supposed to mean. And then I pretty much used that one for quite a few years. My mom had, I think, like a fairy tarot deck that I would use from time to time at home just to switch things up.
Your grandma buy that for her too? She's just like creating a long lineage of like tarot decks for all.
Everybody. And
Get a deck and you get a deck.
then I don't think I really started to collect decks until college, when that's when I started to like expand my collection and try to really find a deck that spoke to me that I could read more intuitively. And then once I started to take classes is what I actually, I think, picked up my first like typical Rider-Waite Smith deck to be like, oh, so this is like traditional meaning, traditional symbolism, like what I'm actually like, if you want to do the traditional way. So, and that's a basically how I read now is trying. I mean, a lot of the classes I take now teach based on the traditional meanings, but also encouraging you to build your own intuition based around that. So that's the
I
way
love
I like
that.
to read. So,
And you take like you've been taking like a ton of classes.
yeah, so I'm in one right now for the major arcana that's taught by my local metaphysical shop. And then she's teaching a minor arcana class starting next month. So just, yeah, just I take ones that I can from time to time. I did a class from one of the tarot readers I watch on YouTube that was super in-depth. Oh gosh, Minnow Pond Tarot.
Okay. I have not heard of that, but that is interesting. I like
Yeah.
to do some re let's I like to do some research and see what else are what other people are doing, especially on
Yeah.
the YouTube, which all the best tarot readers are on YouTube.
Apparently, you'll be
Apparently.
there soon.
If I can figure out how to like do that. I recorded a video. I recorded the Wheel of Fortune that'll come out like tomorrow or the next day. I recorded on video with the intent to post it to YouTube, and then I fucked up, and whatever I did, the audio's not there, so it's just me, like, pantomiming at my phone. So first step, learning how to video myself.
You can just ADR it and just completely record over it.
Oh my God. Just like those TikToks where the boyfriend or whatever tries to like voice over what their like partner's doing with their makeup.
Yes.
Great. No, that's so great. And so what is your, what do you have, like a soul deck, like a deck that you choose to read when you're reading for others or for yourself? Or do you just kind of like whatever's closest to you?
Just kind of whatever's closest to me. I got the Pasta Tarot for Christmas, and that's pasta. The one I've been meeting with recently.
Like spaghetti. Yeah.
Like spaghetti.
No, wait, do you have a picture? Or like, I'll look it up. Okay.
This is the Pasta Tarot.
No, it's so cute. Look at it. It's got like a checkered, like Lady and the Tramp tablecloth.
It does. That's the Moon card.
When the moon hits your eye like a... Oh, it's so cute. It's like a little like ravioli in the sky.
Yeah, and then it's got like a little tomato and a garlic.
Frolicking spices.
It's so cute.
That's so cute. And so have you been reading with that lately?
Yeah, so I've been trying to get more familiar with this deck. So I've been doing a lot of readings with it recently.
Is this the deck that like really gets into like the nitty gritty stuff of your life too? It's like, we're a pasta tarot deck, but also we're going to talk about all your trauma. Let's dig in, friend. Like, exactly.
Let's dig in. Just gets it.
It's like a dinner and therapy at the same time. I love that. I'm going to have to look into that. I have a, I got a tarot deck years ago just for fun from Urban Outfitters, which was like, mm-hmm. just like food ones. And I, for a really, so a fun fact about me is that with my special brand of ADHD, like I never know what I want to eat. And like, I have a hard time like committing to things. And I take this very seriously as someone who has been in like eating disorder recovery. Like when I want to eat, I want to like really enjoy what I'm eating. Right. So I got, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I got this deck. I was like, ha ha ha. Like, I'll use this deck to like help me like figure out what I want to eat. And I really helped. I really loved it for that. I'm not giving like eating disorder advice. I'm just saying like,
hey, if it works, it works.
I was really attached to the fries card. Like every time it came up, I was like, off to Wendy's.
Treat yourself.
Divine Wendy's fries. So it was really fun for me. But no, I love that. I love that that's the deck you've been, have you been taking that to meetings? Like when you go to like your,
yeah.
Are yeah, you the most popular one there?
Everyone's like, can I look at that deck? It looks so fun.
So fun. I love it. Can I add it just out of curiosity? I know you just put it away, but can I see? So we're going to be talking about justice today, and I would just love to know what the pasta deck has for justice.
Let's find it.
Okay. I love humans and that they make shit like this.
Me too. I was like, I've never been creative, I guess, in terms of like art, so yeah. Coming up with something like a tarot deck, like 78 cards, I feel like I'd run out of ideas.
I've played around with the idea of like creating a tarot deck, but I can't draw. Like I've been teaching myself, but I'm not very good at it still. Mm-hmm. And like the idea that people sit down and they have these big like intuitive like downloads of art 78 times, I'm just kind of like, yo, that's crazy. I could not. Did you find it?
I did.
Oh my God. No, it's Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
It is.
Dude, what it was, what? How did she get the pasta tarot?
And then so her scales are two bowls with pasta in them. The pillars are two giant pieces of pasta. And then she's in her red robe, like the typical one, but then she's got a nice little like neck thing of pasta as well. Yeah.
You could have asked me to put money down on what I thought that card was going to have. And there is in no universe I would have said Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to be on that card holding bowls of pasta. Like it just wouldn't have like, you could have given me 10,000 guesses and I would never have gotten there. That's the best thing I've ever seen in my life. All right. I'm genuinely going to have to go get this deck for myself. It's been a really long time since I've been like, I have to get a deck, but I think I need that one.
I believe it's on Amazon.
All right. Give Jeff Bezos and his Phallic
I mean,
spaceship.
hopefully you can find it somewhere else too.
I'll listen. If he's gonna send that man to a different planet and then maybe he stays on that different planet, I'll buy his $10 pasta. Pasta Duro. I'll do it for Ruth. So we are gonna be talking about justice today. Anthony, before we start off and we dig into justice, we were just talking about this on the Patreon office hours AMA thing yesterday, that they're in some decks, and actually originally justice was card 8 and strength was card 11. And before we dive into just talking further in depth about justice, I'd really like to kind of hear what you, because you literally just covered this in your tarot class.
Right.
And I do know about it, but you just literally had a test on it. So I'm going to have you kind of take for this.
So what I liked about the current class I'm in is she's teaching from more of like a Eastern Kabbalistic perspective. So we're focusing a lot more on like the correspondences assigned to each card. And so when Arthur took over and decided to do his version of the tarot, there's 22 major arcana cards. There's also 22 Hebrew letters to the alphabet. And so they wanted to assign a letter to each card. But once they did that, it kind of messed with all of the other correspondences that are already been decided by previous designations of the tarot. And so they were like, we're just gonna flop these around and it'll be fine.
No one will know. Oh.
You just have to ignore all of the, like, we'll just take out all of these other little pieces from the pictures. And then like, you won't associate that card with this anymore.
You know what tarot needs? A white man. You know what tarot's been missing? A white man. White people. You know what would make tarot better? You know that new girl? Oh no! A white man! Oh, I've never seen new girl. Like, it's one of my things. I think about that all the time.
That's a relatable feeling.
Yes. Very white people sitting here. So I want to ask, in regards to that, with strength originally being in the middle of the deck and you having learned it both ways, I personally do like where strength is sitting. I do think tarot's kind of evolved into that. While it is kind of a more appropriated position, it does make more sense to me in my journey and I think where things are now. However, I would love to kind of hear like the perspective of where and why justice, like why in your, and I could do this, but I want to ask you because it's not about me here. I would love to know, like, in what ways do you relate to justice coming first, and in what ways do you relate to strength coming first?
So in the way that we're talking about it in this class that I'm in, so the way that you teach the major arcana of like the life line, the death line, and the rebirth line, we've broken it up into three similar cycles. So the first seven cards, so hold on, the Magician through the Chariot are the persona cycle. And then strength through temperance would be the moral cycle. And then your last seven cards are the cosmic cycle. So when you get to the moral cycle, which is strength through temperance, the reason why we like to put justice first is, as you're telling this story, it's kind of the first time that the fool in his journey is going from, because in the Chariot, we're leaving this like place of comfort, this place where he's done all of his development through these previous cards. And now he's going off and he's having to see how his development holds up to other people and these interpersonal connections, like these contracts and commitments that he's going to make to other people throughout his entire journey following him.
That makes a lot of sense. I do like justice being first in that context. It does make more sense that way. I do think that the life, death, rebirth line was made more popular by Rachel Pollack, who wrote Tarot Wisdom, and then 28 Degrees of Tarot. And then she had another book come out as well that I've not read yet.
28 Degrees of Wisdom? Isn't that the one?
Yeah, I think that's the other one. Yeah, there's Tarot Wisdom, 28 Degrees of Tarot. Yeah, and then that one. And I have not read that one yet. But Rachel Pollack kind of made that, the life, death, rebirth line, more she brought it into popularity, basing it off strength being at the start of the death line. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at it from this perspective and this more Kabbalistic Eastern perspective, that makes a lot of sense. And I do like that.
Yeah. So the way that she, and then when we have strength kind of in the middle of that cycle, it kind of teaches us to like, it helps if you, so we've also been teaching with comparing the Rider-Waite to the Toth deck to kind of see how Aleister Crowley kind of reintegrated some of the things that they took out when they made the Rider-Waite deck. So the strength card in the Toth deck is the Whore of Babylon. So
I forgot about that.
So it's like Mother. Teaching us to embrace like the ecstasy of our primal self.
Yeah.
And so it can get a little confusing when you look at the strength card. You don't necessarily get that. Yeah. So, there's a cycle in Gnosticism, I think, called samsara that we were talking about. That's associated with the strength card that we didn't really dive much into, but that was kind of one of the things that our teacher associates with the strength card and like why its placement in the middle is little, like you've got to have a little bit more development before you get there rather than like, if you're just jumping right into sex at the beginning of this cycle, like that's all you're focusing on versus if you've had a little bit more proper development, then.
Oh, so you're talking foreplay. Yeah. You definitely need the foreplay before you get to the sex part. Yeah. It all comes down to sex. At the end of the always. Day. Always, always.
It always comes down to sex.
If you're talking about, I had a creative writing professor when I was in college. Sorry, my asthma is so bad because we're literally packing my house up to move, and you discover so much dust.
I was gonna say, it's like you just uncovered all of the dust.
Literally, I'm like finding like species of particles that haven't seen light of day since we moved in here like 4.5 years ago. So he had this, my professor, Dr. Clay, had this like idea that every piece of art ever could boil down to three things: life, death, or sex. And I got real quippy with him. And I was like, yeah, even Shel Silverstein poems, because it was a poetry class. And he looked at me and he went, yeah. And I was like, I don't think Shel put that much perspective into his poems. And he looked at me dead in the eye and then assigned us all a paper on Shel Silverstein poems and how you could relate them back to life, death, and sex. And he was right. You can do a lot. You can do a lot with Shel's. A lot of it's death. A lot of Shel Silverstein's, very little goes back to sex, almost none. Almost all of them are death. That dude was morbid as fuck. it does make sense. Like, I think even with like, you know, life, death, rebirth, life, death, sex, like that's making something from nothing. Like that's exactly what is kind of looking at like with this more Eastern perspective of teaching tarot and the major arcana. And then you can also kind of look at that with the Western perspective too. And kind of fit that in. I think that's really fascinating. All right. Yeah. I will give him some credit for being ahead of his time, I guess.
A little bit.
I was his least favorite student, so.
How could you be anyone's least favorite?
Listen, I said this to you guys yesterday, but in real life, I'm awkward as fuck. Like, the people who know me in real life, I'm just like, I'm not all there. But I have a lot of fun. So anyway, we are going to dive into justice really quick. We're going to talk about the card.
So we've got somewhat of a regal figure sitting on a throne in red robes, holding the scales of justice and a sword. He's surrounded by two pillars. And then there's a, what would you call that? Tapestry behind him. Yeah.
So what's interesting about like the formulation of this card for me, and you'll probably agree just from like, you know, even classes you've taken with it, is that it's set up very similarly to both how the High Priestess is set up and the Hierophant.
Exactly.
They're exactly the same. You've got a person between two pillars with a tapestry behind them, kind of representing like the, you know, specifically injustice in this case. There's yes, no, right, wrong, and then truth being kind of like veiled in the background. That's kind of what that symbology is talking about right there. The other thing that's really important about justice, how it's depicted, I think, usually, is that justice is holding in one hand a sword completely upright and in the other hand scales. And they both represent different forms of balance. Swords are, they're created to be within perfect balance with a person's weight, arm length, something else about it, geometry. So I don't specifically remember, but it's like, Anthony's like, yeah, you're not getting any help from me there. I don't know.
I'm not a swordsmith. Sorry.
I like swords. But they're designed to be within balance. So this, you know, this is Excalibur. Whenever we see a sword, specifically the Ace of Swords, and then in the major arcana, and then you see it within the court cards, like we're looking at Excalibur. We're looking at like the symbolism for like truth, wisdom, righteous battle. Arthur, I bet the fucking word crusade is in here. I'm just going to just throw that down. I'm not saying that the crusades were righteous. I'm just saying that at the time they were being fought, they were being blamed on righteous whatever and not blatant theft, which is what they were. They're just blatant theft. So you've got the sword here, and then on the other side you've got the scales. And now this is talking about more of like a concept of balance that I think we vibe with better, which is like keeping things equal and, you know, get as above so below, what you give is what you get, and that kind of idea. And so justice is not just talking about it's not just talking about what's fair and right. It's also talking about wisdom and having the ability to kind of sit not on one side or the other, but in the middle, which is truth, which is, again, the same thing as the Hierophant and the High Priestess. It's all different ways of sitting with truth and clarity and wisdom. That's what that veil kind of represents. Anthony, do you have anything to add to it?
I don't think so. Just like, yeah, kind of like an unbiased, neutral party. Like, yeah, red to me always represents passion. So I feel like the justice card, they have a passion to find the truth, whether it's not the right or the wrong, but the truth.
Yeah. So this is the type of energy that's like not going to they're not going to take a political stance or a stance on something just because that's what the majority of people in their life. There is somebody that is going to generally be interested in like researching a problem. This card very like and wanting to get to the bottom of how to actually make it better. This is an energy of someone who's very into social justice. This card is represented by Libra, and Libra has this desire to be balanced and to be fair and has this perspective on like morality and where we're not looking at like, you know, understanding that sometimes being equal doesn't mean everybody gets the same, but sometimes people get more. Like this is a card that would really like whenever we're talking about reparations for the Black community in America, this is the card that comes up. This is that mindset. This is voting for humanitarian policies. That's what Libra really stands for. And it's, again, it goes to this justice between scale and sword, which is knowing that fair isn't always equal. And that's why the sword is also lifted above the scales. So that's the really cool part about this card. It's also card 11 in the major arcana. And this is the first time I can't say to anybody, this is what this number stands for, because in numerology, it goes 1 through 10. So when you get to an 11, this is when we get to play this cool little game of we're leveling up in numerology. So we're taking 1 plus 1. So that's creation manifestation plus creative manifestation equals 2 High Priestess, which is 2s are all about kind of like choice and mirror of self, and reflection. So you've got this choice mirror of self being influenced by 2 of these kind of like manifestation, almost like magician like energies of creation. So, you know, when you're looking at that, it's what do I do, how do I make something and find that truth in it. How do you feel about that, Anthony?
I really like that. Yeah, I really like how you do that. That's a really good way to combine it.
Yeah, it helps me a lot because, again, I'm neurodivergent and I'm not going to ever memorize one full thing on like meaning on a card. So like knowing the pieces really helps me find a meaning. Like what did Rosa Marina say yesterday? She was like the strings.
Oh, yes.
I thought that was a really insightful way to talk about like building connections and synthesizing information. Like you've got a blob of knowledge and a blob of knowledge, and what she's looking for are the strings
Exactly. Those like situational strings to help pull it together.
Yeah, I thought that was really fascinating. I liked that a lot. My teacher's psychology brain was like, keep talking. Tell me more about these. Tell me more about these strings. She's gonna listen to this and laugh. So this is the part where we get to read what this will have. I genuinely, before I started reading this book, did not understand how how bonk this man was. Are we ready? I'm gonna recite it to you like Shakespearean sonnets. You ready,
I'm
Anthony?
excited.
Yeah, snap for me when I'm done. Here we go. Justice, card 11. As this card follows the traditional symbolism and carries above all its obvious meanings, there is little to say regarding it outside the few considerations collected in the first part to which the reader is referred. That means nothing. That's a whole bunch of sentences that have nothing to do with each other. It will be seen, however, that the figure is seated between pillars like the high priestess, and on this account, it seems desirable to indicate that the mortal principle which deals unto every man according to his works, while, of course, it is in strict analogy with higher things, differs in its essence from the spiritual justice which is involved in the idea of election. The latter belongs to a mysterious order of providence, in virtue of which it is possible for certain men to conceive the idea of dedication to the highest things. The operation of this is like the breathing of the spirit where it wills, and we have no canon of criticism or ground of explanation concerning it. It is analogous to the possession of the fairy gifts and the high gifts and the gracious gifts of the poet. We have them or have not, and their presence is as much a mystery as their absence. The law of justice is not, however, involved by either alternative. In conclusion, the pillars of justice open into one world and the pillars of the high priestess onto another. Tell me this man knows anything about what this card means. Tell me this man is confident.
It doesn't sound
This man looks like he knew he had 250 words left to finish an essay. And he
it. Just like
like hitting the middle tab on your phone until it says something. Well, to summarize, I think the most interesting part of what Arthur said here is that the high priestess opens into one world and justice opens into another world. So the tapestry, kind of that door that is concealing the back, the high priestess is going inside. It's asking you to consider the morality of different things, like the internal workings of your subconscious and unconscious, whereas justice is kind of like now you're still working with moral, but what you're deciding and what's going on is directly affecting the outside. So it's opening outward. Does that make sense? Or am I,
Yeah,
do you agree
no,
with,
that makes sense.
do you have anything to add to that?
I think one way always to remember when you're looking at the major arcana is like the fool's going on this journey, and so he's beating justice, but also becoming justice. Like it's a two-sided coin. Like you are going to meet and interact with this person, which will have an effect on you in one way, but you're also going to become this person. And so that's also going to transform and develop you in a different way. And so just how those things are going to affect the decisions you make as you move through that journey.
A really good way to connect that is kind of like going from like you have parents and then later on becoming a parent, or having a teacher and then later on becoming a teacher, and using those past experiences to kind of guide you forward. Like being around animals and then being an animal. No, I'm kidding. Like, and then having I take the Michael Scott approach to things, which I just let whatever comes to my brain come out of my mouth. It's a really good way of living. It gets me into a lot of trouble.
I would love to become my dog.
I would love to be your dog as well. That's the cutest dog I've ever had. Like,
Like, how could you not?
no, like the little tongue. So Anthony's dog is the cutest little one-eyed tongue sticking out friend I've ever seen. It's just so small and so cute and looks so ha I'm talking about you and your little furry ears. It looks like a chihuahua and a squirrel met and produced the cutest thing you've ever seen in your life. I'm talking like it looks like a Neopet, okay? Like, it looks like a Neopet.
I have a Neopet card with him on it, please. Oh,
No! Oh, wait, you, I was thought you said you had one. I was like, oh my God.
I said, can I have one?
I'll draw you one, but it'll look like Trogdor because everything I draw ends up looking like Trogdor.
I can't draw either, so that's why I have artistic friends. I am not the artistic friend.
And this is a small segue, but at one point when I was really like into like learning how to draw, when I had way more free time, I still do it, but not, I'm not like as dedicated to the process of it because I've just had a lot of stuff happening in my personal life. But so one night we're sitting down and I'm drawing like I'm like, I got like my shading pencils and like doing like all the little shading things. Gabe's got like one pencil. I only gave him one. I was like, I need the others. So I gave him one pencil and he's down there and he's looking at me and he's just kind of like drawing and doodling. He's quiet. And I'm like all over the place using all this stuff. And then I finish and I go, look what I drew. And I turn it around. I shit you not, it looks like a stick figure. I thought I had done something and I looked like a stick figure. And I'm like, look. Gabe's like, oh, that's really good. And I'm like, well, what did you draw? Because I gave him one pencil and I had all the tools. So I was like, certainly it can't be better. And he goes, I don't want to show you. And I was like, oh, because mine is so good. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, no. What did you do? So he turns it around. This fucking thing looks like a photograph of me. It looks like a black and white photograph of my face. He had one pencil. I was like,
you're like, get out.
It was the most humble that I've ever been in my life. I have to try and like put a picture on like my stories of like, it's on our fridge right now. It's so good. And I gave it, it's literally so good. And I literally drew a stick figure. In case anyone wants to know what it's like being married to me.
I mean, at least he knew he didn't want to show you because he knew how you'd react.
I was just like, how dare you? How fucking you? One pencil, you outshine me? Absolutely not. Like I also like I got him a whittling kit one year for Christmas. I was like, one, because he likes to be creative, and two, I was like, because he doesn't know how to whittle and it'll humble him. This man took a cube and whittled it into a raven in like an hour and a half, like a literal raven. And I was like, you're grounded, never again, good luck to you. Jack of all trades, that man. In my defense, he did make the ugliest lamp of all time. It's in our living room. He calls it the poop lamp. She can like go inside it and that's where she poops. So
oh my gosh.
I'll send you a picture. Anyway, so do we want to read the definitions of this card?
Yes. Love interviews.
You get tarot and you get whatever the fuck that was about poop lamps. Okay, so here's the upright meaning. And this is the Smith Rider Waite app that you can get on your phone with tarot. It's the Smith Rider Waite. It's got all of like the meanings. This doesn't come with the meanings. It just gives you like the worst dissertation ever on each card. It's the worst book ever. Highly recommend, don't buying. But here's the upright meaning.
How much did you spend on that book?
I think, would you believe me if I told you it didn't? Oh, $9.95.
Okay, that's not that bad.
That's not that bad. I got this years ago. I think I read like one thing of it and I was like, this is the most useless book I've ever, but now it's so useful.
Yeah, I mean, it's inside of a white man's brain, which.
Oh no. Oh my God. It is a terrifying glance into a white man who had way too much power.
Most of them.
Yeah. It's what justice is about. It's all about giving less power to white men. Upright, equity, rightness, probity. That's the word. That's exactly what it says. Executive, triumph of the deserving side in law. And then the reversed is law in all its departments. Legal complications, bigotry, bias, excessive severity. So as with, you know, the majority of these cards, like there are facets to truth. Like you could say that this card could represent like systemic racism and the problems within like the law and the way that we have set up like capitalism, for instance. Like everything is built in with such institutionalized and systemic racism and misogyny and homophobia and just all of the isms, right? Like that, every ism you can imagine, it's only built for white men. So, you know, so justice does kind of like shine a light on that. Again, what is fair isn't always equal and what's equal isn't always fair. But I do think that like when you're talking about justice in a more like, in like a deeper sense, it again, like it's not just talking about law. I think like every time you pull this card, you're not getting sued. Like there's, it's a deeper thing to that. It's so much more about like morals and how you're thinking. And, you know, there's this mythological, like facet to it, which is that you're, you know, the Egyptians didn't have the same kind of rules and like regulations that we did when you're talking about the heart versus the feather analogy. Like, murder was a thing. People were killing people. You know, there were people, you know, you were supposed to kill some people, but sometimes you had to kill them. And so you're not going with like, in like this Christian mentality we have now, we're like, have you followed all of Moses's tablet rules? Like, have you the 10 commandments, the rules he wrote on that rock? Have you done them? Like, you're not going to like get denied, you know, like in this case, it's more or less like, do you stand by what you did? Do you take accountability? Do you stand by your actions? Do you apologize for what you've done? It's weighing your heart, not necessarily your actions. So it's not asking you if you've been perfect. It's asking you if you can stand here with integrity and take accountability in what you did and why you did it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main difference. And I think that's where justice wants us to go. How do you feel about that? Or what are your thoughts?
I like that. The book I have the territorial book. It's on TikTok. I don't know if you've seen it, but so I bought it. It came a little while ago, but the reverse meaning literally says unaccountability. So I feel like that would mean in the upright, that's exactly what it means. It's like taking accountability for the actions you've taken or the actions of others around you, and those consequences that are going to come with those actions.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like taking, and it's not even just taking accountability for what you've done personally. It's also looking at like the wide history of things, right? Like, we want to look at it in like an umbrella sense, like,
yeah,
you know, looking at specifically American and colonialistic history. Colonialistic is not a word, just so we know that. Colonialism history. There are very few of us alive today that are actually responsible for colonialism. But fun fact about me is that one of my direct ancestors on my maternal side was like the literal captain of the Mayflower, like the literal of the fucking Mayflower. And like, while I didn't go give a bunch of blankets filled with European diseases to the indigenous peoples of Americas, like, you know, we do have to deal with the fact that like that happened, and that's a direct tie. And there's a karmic energy in that. There's a justice in that. There is a line of events that, while I'm not personally responsible for it, like, it's irresponsible of me then to turn around and be like, yeah, I don't give a shit about anyone's rights. Like, no,
well, we wouldn't be here without those actions having happened, even though they were hundreds of years ago. Like,
yeah, well, and it also
still doesn't erase that.
Yeah, it set a baseline for injustices that we're still seeing the ramifications of now. And the majority of specifically white people who live here, we're all from Europe. We all colonized America. Like, we're all kind of responsible for the ramifications of peoples who have been oppressed here in the US. That's just our responsibility to start making corrections for. And there's that karmic energy of justice in that. It's also like working through in like in my marriage, like, Gabe and I don't, like, we love each other dearly. We don't have a perfect marriage. Like, we fight. We had to figure out how to be co-parents. Like, we've done a lot of growing together. And part of that growing is realizing that we're not always going to be able to pull equal weight. Like, some days I'm going to come in having pulled 80, and it's been a lot of me pulling 80 because I bring my daughter to work with me, and Gabe coming in at night and tucking in that 20% when I've got nothing left to give. Mm-hmm. And we've had to find the justice in that, because it's very easy to hold resentment. And at the same time, like, we both have different roles, and we're both doing the very best we can with the circumstances. So is it fair? No. Is it equal? No. But is this what's happening right now? And do we have to find a balance in it? Yeah. And so justice also talks about that. And so there's also the aspect of justice, which is that by nature of us all being alive, and this is the morbid truth of it, because we're alive, we all deserve to die. We all deserve to live, and we deserve to die. That's literally anything that's breathing. And I think that that's very interesting that we get that revelation in this card right before it's almost like that's the last thing you do in justice, is be like, oh fuck, I deserve to die because I deserve to live. And then you go into Hanged Man and you have to like sit in acceptance and be like, well, I guess I live in this tree now.
Like, I'm just going to sit here because I don't have anywhere else to go.
What's super interesting about that, like in the butterfly metaphor that like we kind of talk about, and is like, in justice, the butterfly is becoming whole again. And they're working through this thought process, which is equal parts, I don't know what comes next. I don't know if I live or I die. I don't know if this is the living or if this is the dying, but I know that I deserve both.
Exactly.
And that's such a fascinating concept to me. especially as someone, so I lived like, I had a really traumatic childhood, and there's this, and like this feeling of like, why me? Like, why did this have to happen? And justice is kind of this thing of like, it was never about you. It was never about you. This is life. And it has really, really great moments, and it has really, really shitty moments, and none of us get to choose when or where they take place. That doesn't mean that we don't have to deal with the ramifications of it, or it doesn't mean we don't grieve or celebrate when we need to, but there is this kind of like balancing action of like, it was never about you. It just happened. So what do we do? Mm-hmm. It's that part of grief where you like move out of bargaining and denial and into like the acceptance that, well, it doesn't matter why you, it was you. So what now? Yeah. Only I get to cough on this podcast. I'm the only one that gets to turn away and cough. Okay. literally nobody. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on justice, and when it comes up in readings for you, Anthony, like, what is your thought with that, and how do you feel about it?
I mean, especially when it comes up, I feel like there's a truth that needs to come to light a lot of the time, or that something needs balancing because of those scales. Typically it's something that like the person I'm reading for or myself is very passionate about. Like we said earlier, those red robes need passion, and the passion for finding the truth. So I would say like, you're always looking for like, you always want to find that right answer, but whether or not it's going to be what you really thought it was, and like, let's see, and like the way that you work through it once you find the truth, I think is a big aspect of the justice card, because the whole point of that person sitting on that throne is like, they're meant to be there unbiased, just to find that middle point of like, well, I'm here for the truth. I'm not here for like what benefits whatever party better.
Yeah.
So that with that double-edged sword, they're going to cut down whatever needs to be cut down. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to understand how to move forward from that.
Yeah. It's almost even like out of your control.
Yeah.
In so many ways, because yeah, it's happening at Major Arcana. Like,
exactly.
There are times like you're not even seeking to balance anything out, and all of a sudden you just kind of feel like plates sliding, and you're like, oh no, like this can look like your friends splitting, or your friends getting in a fight, or it can look like something going on around you where you're going to have to be forced to like make a decision based on the actions of somebody else. And yeah, and then you sitting there having to be like, I guess I have to like make the smartest decision I can with the information I have available to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, that's something I experienced just a couple of months ago, where it was like, I mean, if I'm going to continue moving forward with this situation, like at least all the cards are on the table now, I guess. Like I've seen the perspective of the other side. So like now I have to make the decision of like how I'm going to move forward based on what I know as the truth now, because I've seen what's on the other side of that tapestry on those pillars. Like I'm not on the unknown side. Like I've traveled through justice and seen what's being hidden, like whatever he's got on the other side of his card.
Yeah. It's also kind of your last chance to not peek behind that veil. It's kind of your very last chance, right? Because if you think of death as being that veil, it's kind of your last chance to be right in front of it. Like, I would say like justice is like you're in front of the veil. Hanged man is kind of that moment where they're like, okay, close your eyes for your present, like close your eyes, like, and then you get delivered unto death. And so it's kind of that last chance to be on the living side of death, of the veil. It's a very interesting place to be because it's both like you feel both very sturdy there and also just very off kilter. Like you feel sturdy in the truth you're discovering. You feel sturdy in what you're about to say or what you're about to do, but it's everything around you that doesn't feel as it's that I'm really set in my decision, my thinking, where I'm at, but I have no idea how you're going to react to this. I have no idea what's going to happen after I do this. So I'm kind of like having to embrace the behind the veil, like whatever is there, whatever whatever response I get, I'm going to have to deal with the effects of, but at least I can stand with my I can stand myself. I can like really hold myself accountable and stand in that integrity. Yeah, I like that a lot. Justice is a very deep card.
I agree.
This is the part where where I read what I wrote about this. I haven't read this in, I'm not gonna lie, you haven't read this in a year. So we'll see if I stand by this. Sometimes I read this and I'm like, hell yeah, Jacqueline, that was smart. And sometimes I read these and I'm like, we've grown.
I was like, it's nice to feel like those moments where you're like, I look at this a little differently now.
Yeah.
Like, I've had some experiences that have changed my opinion.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see, like, because I think I wrote these in like 2018, 2019. So it's been like,
Pre-COVID.
it's yeah, and like we like I talked to you guys a little bit yesterday. Like I'm writing like pre-COVID changed.
Oh, COVID changed so many things for my life. I look at so many things differently since pre and post COVID. I mean, we're not really post COVID, but
No,
post
post the
in
horror.
air quotes.
Something I'll have to worry about the rest of my life probably, but no, it's very, it's just very, it's a whole new world on so many different levels. All right, well, this is what I wrote. Let's see if we like this. It makes perfect sense to enter justice immediately after the Wheel of Fortune, to be in a place so concerned and rooted in the concept of time, evolution, and development, a place that considers all we have ever been and are, is to become one with energetic karma. The ruling principle of justice. What do we deserve? Who are we? What have we done? These questions send us deeply inward to see the deliverance of law and rule. Here we are confronted with our own personal failings and successes, and we begin to see justice as transactional. What we do affects where we go, affects who we interact with, affects how we are treated in return, and we spin. We sit in Solomon's wisdom and learn contrition for all we have done and balance that with what can be done now as repetition. Reparation is what I meant there. Remembering that all we do affects others and then therefore ourselves. Karma is a delicate balance, yes, but it is also circular. So that's what I wrote. I don't disagree with that.
I don't disagree with it either. I like it.
Right? Good job, 2019 me. The questions I wrote for this card, to kind of better get to better know how we kind of sit in justice currently is what do we believe we deserve? What do we deserve? What actions do we need to be mindful of? In what way are we being asked to wield our karmic wisdom justly?
Okay.
All right.
Those are good questions.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, Basel. That was me self-fiving because I can't high-five Anthony because he's in a screen.
Slap the
So I would say that the one thing I touched on here is like King Solomon. Are you familiar with King Solomon's biblical, like him in biblical history? Okay, so
vaguely, but not very, not
not
in depth.
everyone got raised by two pastors, okay? Pastoral grandpa and a pastor father. Not all of us could be so unlucky. So King Solomon is in the Bible. I believe King Solomon is Old Testament, but essentially, like, and I think I've talked about the story a couple of times, but essentially, like, God was like, hey, Solomon, I'm going to give you a gift. Whatever you want in the world, you can have it. And Solomon was like, I choose wisdom. And God was like, that's amazing. So one of Solomon's very first tests of wisdom was that these two women came in and they're arguing over this baby. And please, this is the dumbest, fucking dumbest story of all time. Okay. And these two women are arguing over a baby. And one woman is like, it's my baby. And the other woman is like, no, she's lying. That's my baby. So King Solomon, with his gift of wisdom, his gift says, let's cut the baby in half and you can both have a piece. And one mom says, fine. Sounds fair. Love that. And the other mom says, no, give it to her. Give it to her. And King Solomon, with his God-gifted wisdom, says, that baby's the woman's who didn't want the baby to be cut in half. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the story of King Solomon. But I do think that when you're looking at, like, specifically like tarot made by like Western, like, you've got like a lot of that Catholicism and Protestant deeply rooted like symbology there. And you see King Solomon come up a couple different times, King Solomon and King David. And you see that in the King of Swords, you see it in Justice, you can see it sometimes in the Hierophant. But this whole kind of idea here is that we are really kind of relying on wisdom to not do, because Solomon suggested something that was equal, but not right. And so the moral is that what's equal is not right, and what's right is not equal always. And that people, to do what's right, will make sacrifices. Like, you can look at it from Solomon, but you can also look at it from the perspective of the mother whose baby it actually was, who's like, I would rather another woman raise my child than my child be diced into pieces and then split accordingly. So again, like, the dumbest parable of all time, but that's what we've got. Okay, that's the Bible for you. So I do feel like justice really kind of sits there, because you're the one in justice having to make that, do I cut this baby in half, decision.
Yeah,
not everyone can be graced with such intelligence. But cut it in half.
I mean, it got the problem solved, just not, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily go that route. It's a little bloody for me.
You have to understand that this story is taught in church. Like, it's like, this is the smartest man that's ever lived. Like, ah, yes, this divinely graced wisdom of chopping that child in half, that'll show us who the mother is of that child. It's truly something. But yeah, so I like what you were talking about when you, how you see justice when it comes up in readings, about needing to find that truth and that clarity and sit in the in-between. I really love that. It's very similar for how it comes up for me in readings as well, this idea of kind of having to sit in that in-between. It's also a really good reminder, I think, for me, of don't sit so far on one. Don't be so ignorantly attached to your side that you're not willing to do the research to see. So, like, I'm a firm believer that if you don't know the other side's perspective, you cannot effectively argue. So, yeah, like, for instance, if I'm dealing with like somebody who's on a completely different political side than me, I am never going to be able to make any kind of effective argument to them if I don't know what they're arguing and their talking points are. So, going through and understanding those talking points. Why are they saying this? Where is this coming from? Where does this go back to? It's not me researching it because it's going to change my mind. Mm-hmm. But it's me being willing to look at the other points there and be like, okay, this is how I can most effectively make my point, because I am knowledgeable of what's happening. And I think that's the thing that people who are on the opposite talking point, like people who don't seek out knowledge for knowledge's sake, have a really hard time with when it comes to justice, because they're not researching it because they either don't want to be bothered, or they already know they're wrong and that's not the reason they're fighting.
It's like a confirmation bias. So if they do research, they only look into the things that confirm what they feel also. And it's like, that's not how it works.
No. And so I think that's the hard part of justice. And it comes with that balance of, you know, knowing when to fight, knowing when to just like, be like, you're never going to change, and walking away and going no contact. Justice really holds so many multitudes in it, being in the death line, whether it's at the beginning or the middle of it. I think it being in the death line is so important to our process of getting through the death line altogether, because whether this comes as the first card you enter or it comes in the middle, like, we have to go through this accountability, search of integrity, knowing where we stand in this life, in this spiral, in this time. And we're going to go through this a million times. Yeah. Every single card will live in like 1,000 different facets, like a million different times, like both literally and metaphorically. So we'll have 1,000 chances to kind of go through justice. And I love that for us. It's also, I would also argue that this is a card that's harder than death in a lot of ways. Cause in death, it's just happening.
Like, yeah.
in death, we're just like at a point where we're going through it. Like we're not backing out. Justice is kind of like us arguing with like, but I want to, but you can't, but I want to go, but you cannot, but I, and having to bounce back and forth, almost like you're a ping pong ball for a while. So
yeah,
it's also the last card right before Hanged Man, which is acceptance.
Yeah. So, cause I think you can choose to overlook the truth, even if like, yes, the point of the Justice card is to have a passion to find that truth, but it doesn't mean that like you can lead a horse to water, they don't have to drink it. So like, just because you uncovered it doesn't mean that you have to acknowledge it, doesn't mean you have to move forward with like, that is what I like. You can just be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
You can literally be injustice and Chariot at the same time. You can uncover something and choose to jump back from Justice all the way back to Chariot.
Yeah.
Tarot is so great. Psychologically, like, this is my favorite shit ever. Oh, we have a collective reading. Do you want to pull from your pasta deck?
I would love to. Let me.
I've never loved anything more in my life than this pasta deck and your dog. So great.
I was like, honestly, the hardest part is because they change the suits into types of pasta. So it's like long pasta, short pasta, stuffed pasta, and something else. And so like, it's not quite as intuitive to like which suit is which. So
I'd have made pentacles SpaghettiOs if I were in charge.
That's a great idea.
If I were in charge of the pasta deck,
I was like, where? Well, oh, there it is. I was like, it has a little guidebook. Okay, so wands are short pasta. Cups are stuffed pasta.
Yeah, they are.
Swords are long pasta, which is the one that makes sense to me because swords. Yeah. And then pentacles are tiny pasta.
Tiny so, pasta with SpaghettiOs exist?
I mean, probably.
Listen, I'm going to have words. I'm going to have words with the creator of the pasta deck. If they listen to this podcast, listen, if you are the creator of the pasta deck and you listen to this podcast, it's a long shot. Okay? It's a long shot. It's a long pasta shot. I love you. Just know that. There's no judgment here that you didn't use SpaghettiOs. I think this is fantastic. what is our reading? No, shut, you're laughing. What is it?
The Hanged Man.
It's just
it's how you tell the pasta's done. You throw it on the wall and it sticks.
Yeah, it's al dente. Oh my god, you know what though, that's not always true. My friend did that in high school and it was the worst pasta I ever had in my life.
As an Italian, I have never used that trick until I had roommates, and then I had a roommate just throwing pasta at the wall, and I was like, the hell are you doing, lady? What white people shit is this?
Yeah, no, she did. In high school, she read that, and then she would throw, we loved eating, like, macaroni, like, because we were, like, teenagers, and that's all we could fucking cook. And she would throw shit at the wall. And I was like, Christy, I'm not going to eat pasta at your house anymore. If your way of like knowing if it's done is just you throwing that pasta at your wall. You can't eat at everybody's house. Isn't that how that works?
Stickers exist. And also just taste it. And then you know it's done.
Eat some. I will
say. Fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, okay, Hanged Man. So tell me what intuitive feeling you're getting from that for when this, and this will be like the energy for when the podcast comes out between that episode and the next episode.
So it feels like we've gotten, so I mean, especially considering this is the card following the card we were talking about today, it feels like we've uncovered some sort of truth that we now need to sit with and find acceptance for it, and like how we're going to move forward from it, and also how we're going to untie ourselves from this tree that we're hanging from if we're looking at the typical Hanged Man.
Yeah.
So this, it was briefly discussed in my class of how I think it's Peter was hung upside down on the cross.
Yeah, he was, because he didn't want to be hung right up like Jesus.
Yeah.
You're not 20.
That's an analogy we can always make to the hanged man, since he's hung upside down. And then he's got hit with his legs crossed. It's a symbology for the sulfur symbol in Kabbalah. So,
yeah. Kind of this like sulfur is, I have a periodic oracle deck that has like all of the elements on the periodic table. It's the fucking coolest thing ever. I'm trying to remember what they said about sulfur.
I was like, let me look at my notes and see if I wrote.
I packed it away, or I'd go get it. It's in a box. Well, oh, by the way, I'm moving. I don't know if I've announced.
Yeah, this. I was like, you your life is in boxes.
I'm taking my husband with me. Listen, my house is packed. But people are like, are Jackie and Gabe fine? We are. We're moving. We're moving, and it's gonna be amazing. And everything's great.
Moving is just chaos. So I just did it a couple months ago. So I do not envy you, but I sympathize with your pain.
Thank you for sympathizing with my pain. I'll fly you out here, and you can help me pack, and then you can live in my pain too. Do you want to do that?
Sure, I'll bring Bentley.
you live so far away, but someday we do need to meet. So yes. I can, like, meet you and hug your dog.
Yes, I know Salt Lake City is a little far away. Well, my notes don't say anything about sulfur. I guess Odin was also hung upside down.
Yeah,
these are things I did not know before this class, and I was like, so much information.
Yeah, Peter, Jesus, Odin, all cases of knowing that you're going, knowing where you're going, and having to accept and let yourself hang there. Now, Odin's a tiny bit different, because Odin put himself there. There were no other like outline. He's just like, I would like to sacrifice something to gain wisdom. So he poked out one of his eyes, tied himself to the tree. I'm telling you, right? And then he just covered his eye. Listen, as a person who's lost a portion of one of their eyeballs, I can tell you it's not fun. Highly don't recommend.
What did you do? It was like, hold on, you gotta go.
Okay, so look, I don't know if you know this or not. So when my daughter was a year old, I looked down at her one day, and it was like two Christmases ago. Yeah, it was two Christmases ago. She looked like she had something in her eye, so I went to go like look at it, and instead she swiped my eye and like peeled it like a grape, took like a chunk out of my eye like a grape. And I called my husband. I was like, oh my God, Evie poked me in the eye. Like, I'm in so much pain. And he was like, okay, well, I have to work. And then it turned out that like, but he didn't know that like, I was like, so I was like, no, actually you got to come home. I think I need to go to the doctor. And like, I was like having like eye spasms. So I went to urgent care, which not the right place to go. They were like, yo, this is pretty severe. Like, this is real bad. You need to go to the eye doctor now. So I went, and they were like, this is a freak accident and the worst eye injury we've seen in like a long time. And I found out that the recovery process would be over a year of having to like, I still cry sideways. Like she damaged my eyeball muscle near my tear duct. So like when I cry out of this eye, it goes this way still. Like I'll like, if my pupil dilates too fast, my whole eye spasms. Like it's a whole, I can't believe you didn't know this. Wow. It's part of my lore.
Wow. Where have I been?
Where have I? You've been living in blissful ignorance that you didn't know that this could happen to eyeballs. Are you laughing at that? The worst pun ever told.
Where have I been?
What was super funny is that at the eye doctor, they were like, what happened to the chunk of the eye? And I was like, I didn't see where it went.
Yeah, because that was the first thing on my mind.
I didn't know I was missing a whole chunk of my eyeball, but thank you. Because you can't see it. Like, you can't, like, it's not like a noticeable, like, chunk. Anyway, yeah. I had to wear an eye patch like a pirate for, like, a long time.
Well, I'm glad you don't have to look like a pirate anymore. I have a pirate dog, so.
You do. Bentley, this is why I empathize with Bentley and his one-eyedness, because I've lived that life. It's hard.
It's very similar to what happened to my dogs.
Oh, really?
Kind of. It wasn't a child, it was another dog, but.
Oh, man. Poor Bentles. Bentalope.
He was like a year and a half when it happened, and he's almost nine now, so.
Well, maybe he's forgotten.
I hope so. It was so traumatic for me, but
was.
he as soon as he came home from the vet, he was happy again. So
Oh my gosh, animals are so resilient. I am not. I obviously will be shit talking about this thing that happened to my eyeball till the day I die. Because if there's one thing about me I'm not going to do, it's let something go. I'm going to hold on to it forever. Unlike that piece of my eyeball that's missing. So with hanged man energy, I like that discovering truth, coming to like sit and accept it. I also think it's kind of like an indicator of like enlightenment as well. Like there are a lot of things going on in the world right now that we can either like turn away from it or we can sit with it and like in the same vein of like plucking out your eyes so you can see something, like so that you can accept something or have enlightenment. I think like it's a small sacrifice to make just to watch and learn and see. The best tool that we have as humans to help other humans, especially in like tragedies and like tragedy is not even a strong enough word for what's happening in Palestine and in Rafah right now. And we'll cover, like, I'm sure at this point I've already talked about it in like the current event section, but the only thing we can do is witness.
Yeah. And I feel like that's the least we can do when we are privileged enough to just live on the other side of the world from it and be able to like turn our screens off and forget about it.
It's
Like the least that we could do is set some time aside to witness what's going on and like acknowledge it.
I've heard people even say journal about it, like in your own personal journals, like write it all down, write down the truth of what's happening, because in history books, it's not going to be told the
It's
way,
gonna
like we can like journal it down, say what's happening, call it what it is, donate money where you can, donate your voice where you can, like we're all in an element of like not all of us have even an extra $5 every week to like give somewhere, but we all have voices and we all have eyes and we all have the ability to write down and we all have the ability to contribute to history and to truth in the way that it needs. And that's like it's a huge macrocosm and a very serious example to talk about what's happening in Rafah right now and in Gaza and in Palestine. But it's the same kind of thing like on a very microscopic level in our lives as well. How many people are struggling with like things in our own communities or our own families or even our own like personal houses. And we can choose to look away from it and not see it, or we can choose to acknowledge it and sit with it and come into like a place of acceptance where like the hardest thing we're going to do is observe. So how do we help going forward? Like how are we going to do that next and take that next step? If the
Absolutely.
hardest thing we have to do is acknowledge it's happening, what does that say?
Yeah.
What does
What
that
is
say?
that?
So that would be my, as we're in the episode of justice, that's my social justice, my Libra rising
Your
coming out.
social justice soapbox for the day.
Yeah. Not even you should, my sweet, sweet, sweet husband hears about this 1,000,000,000 times a day. And we're always talking about it, but it's hard. And I wish I could do more than talk about it. And again, this is a chance for me to talk about that app. It's called Five Calls. You can download it to your phone from the App Store from either an Android or an iPhone. And you type in your zip code. It asks you for a little pieces of information. And then it's going to tell you who all your representatives are. It's going to tell you what bills, what legislation is being passed in your areas. And we've got, and I've talked about it in the current events, but hanged man energy is a good time to talk about it. Like, we've got a lot of like anti-transgender, trans community legislation being pushed forward. There's a lot of that going on. We've got primary elections coming up where we're kind of having to decide who we're going to vote for and who the, like, we've got Joe Biden who's voluntarily supporting a genocide. And then you've got Trump, that orange Cheeto person from hell, who's also probably going to be supporting the Republican Party. So we've just got a lot of choices to make. We've got a lot of organizing to do. And the first step of that is actually taking a pause to see what's happening so we can see what we can correct. And that's kind of the hanged man. So I highly suggest downloading Five Calls and looking into that, calling your representatives. I believe they even might provide you with like scripts of like what to say.
I was
Well,
like, I
also,
know it though. Yeah. I was like, I think a lot of places do just to help encourage people to get out there. 'Cause I think that's the biggest deterrent is like a lot of people don't are afraid of saying the wrong thing or not knowing what to say.
yeah, and phone and I mean, I get it. Like, I have anxiety even like opening letters I get in the mailbox. Like, I completely understand that executive dysfunction and that fear, but like this has the option to do emails, and I think it even has the email written out, so all you have to do is plug in like your name where it matters. And yeah, so like believe me when I say like there's no judgment with the executive dysfunction. Like I have it. It's really, really, really hard and debilitating in a lot of ways that are hard to explain. This app super helps with that.
So that's awesome.
All right. Well, Anthony, it has been, and I'm gonna keep you on after I hit stop recording so I can check in with you. But this has been so fun. Like literally any excuse. I think I told you what I asked you to do, and I was like, literally any excuse to get to chat.
Yeah. I was like, this was great.
Capturing him. He has to stay with me in the tiny computer box forever. I loved getting you on, and you're taking these classes and bringing into the conversation about justice and where it sits, and you know, the even just the conversation on in a more Eastern Kabbalistic lens, talking about persona, karma, you know, all of that is so fascinating. And I think lends so much to the conversation of tarot and where it came from and how it's evolving and all of that. So I just really, really appreciate you coming on and talking about that with me. And
of course, yeah, it's great to like learn a different perspective of like where tarot came from and why it is the way it is. Yeah. And why there are so many different variations on tarot and why every different variation is valid in its own way.
And also just like you can relate to one and then relate to another in another lens, and like you don't have to choose. You can, like, one of the things I'm going to do is very much look into and researching this other lens.
Mm-hmm.
Learning more about it, because I feel like that's something that I would definitely relate to and would love to look at justice from the perspective as kicking off that line rather than sitting in the middle of it. So very excited about that. But I'm going to hit, well, first off, before we go, I want to just make sure, do you do readings? Do you offer readings? Is that something that you do right now?
I don't have like a service set up, but I offer readings to anyone that's interested, so they can reach out to me through Instagram. So
I'll put your Instagram in the show notes, so people, if they just scroll down, they'll see it and they can tap on that and go send you messages. So just be checking private message request box there. I absolutely adore you. I love every conversation we have, and thank you for letting me kidnap you into this conversation for a while.
Anytime. It was a great time. So
anytime. Ha ha ha. Is that what you're gonna call it though?
Is that what you're gonna call it?
Do I get to name it?
Stars and shit!
Hey everybody, welcome to Stars and Shit, your dose of astrology with Gabe. So, we're back. I think it's been about almost a month since our last episode. Super cool interview with Anthony. If anyone's ever interested in being a part of the show or talking about something, we love to go through cards with other people, so please reach out, feel free. So I am coming at you from my new studio, which is under construction. I don't know if I've said actually what I do for a living, but I work in acoustics. I used to run the shop at an acoustics business that my friend started, and I've moved into sales and design, and so super interested. I've gone real deep into the physics of sound and all of that. And right now my room is in shambles and sounds pretty bad, and I have a lot of bleed from the windows because of the cars and the road that is busy and right outside my door. So I apologize for the extra noise. I apologize for the difference in quality here. I'm going to try and rein it in a little bit before I put this together. But we will press on nonetheless, because we're ready to get back into it. And we have something big coming up. I want to talk to you guys about the eclipse on April 8th. Most people are aware of it because it is a perfect eclipse, which means it will be visible during the day, and you need to buy the sunglasses that prevent you from being a Donald Trump about it. And let's talk about eclipses and the moon cycles and you know, boil it down deeply to what's the big deal about eclipses, you know? Because they're really just new moons, full moons. We just had a lunar eclipse. But I want to go deeper about what eclipses mean and why. First, I'll just talk about the eclipse. It happens on April 8th. It will perfect sometime around noon Central Time and Eastern Time. Check on the time for your time zone. It does change, but this is an eclipse that is ruled by Mars because it is happening in the sign of Aries, and Aries is ruled by Mars. And because of that, we like to look at where Mars is and what it's doing, and it is in an applying conjunction to Saturn in Pisces. So that's something to keep in mind. Mars applying to Saturn means that there might be some actions or energy or ambition that the question is about the constraints or the boundaries that you may have to get over to make this action happen. So that's kind of a theme of this eclipse. A solar eclipse is a new moon, which is also initiatory. The most common way to talk about it is planting seeds. You may not see the growth of that seed right away, but digging the hole and putting the seed in the ground. And this is also in a tight conjunction to the planet or planetary body Chiron, which isn't talked about a whole lot, but Chiron is a very far away dwarf planet that moves very slowly. It's been in Aries for a number of years. I actually don't know how long it stays in sign, something like 50 years. Check me on that. But Chiron is about deep wounds, the kind that kind of stay with you your whole life. Chiron, the mythology of Chiron is about the centaur who taught many heroes, but most notably Hercules. One of the most popular stories is Hercules accidentally shooting Chiron with a poison arrow, but because Chiron was immortal, he would not die. He would just continue to be in pain. And so there was really nothing that could be done to save his life. So Chiron is in constant agony. There's another story regarding Prometheus and saving him from his horrible fate of being basically brutally killed every day. So what wounds may be coming up right now? What's in the air supply? What's being talked about in regards to starting a new venture? The other thing that I'm sure everybody will be talking about is Mercury retrograde. And there is a Kazemi 3 days following the eclipse, which is when Mercury comes into contact with the sun, which is a big moment in the retrograde cycle. It often is illuminating to the themes of the retrograde, what things are being revised. Sometimes it's a moment to catch your breath. So a lot of things happening in April. I'm going to try and jam-pack this episode, but also focus in on the eclipse. So let's talk about moons, moon cycles for a second, specifically new moons, which is what a solar eclipse is. New moons are about going inward, sleeping without our nightlight. What images, fears, or anxieties and shamefulness accompany us? Without the nighttime luminary guiding us through the night, we are forced to suffer the dark. It's a phenomenon that plants, animals, and nature have, adapted to. Animals take cover and as predators move more freely. Plants and fish are forced to adjust their cycles. I watched a Netflix show called Night, all about new moons, basically, which is very interesting. At a perfect solar eclipse, the moon moves between the Earth and the sun. One thing that's always amazed me is that from our perspective, the moon and the sun appear to be the same size in the sky. Scientifically and astronomically, this is obviously significant and probably most of the reason why Earth is able to sustain life. But symbolically. Like, what a profound daily vision to see the moon suffer the phases as the sun shines true. You know, they're both the same size and one changes, except on the occasion of an eclipse. Like, wow. Eclipses happen because both the sun and the moon's path around the Earth cross over the ecliptic, aptly named, which is the line that the Earth takes around the sun. Imagine a pathway. You've seen it in, you know, science class when you were a kid. This is the ecliptic. The places that the path of the moon and the path of the Earth going around the sun intersect are called the nodes of the moon, which very slowly move around the ecliptic, going about one sign every 3 or so years, 2.5. They mark the locations of the eclipses. Astrologers see the nodes as specific locations of concentration, convergences of energy, a filter to accentuate a message or an intention, whether it's the sun and the moon coming into contact with it, or if Venus is crossing through the node of the moon. Astrologers would see that as an indication that Venus's will would be amplified. The north and south moon also have different meanings. The north is typically the energy we are moving toward, and the south node is energy that we are moving away from. This can be viewed as like past karma or future karma, life lessons, or even life purpose. In ancient times, eclipses were seen as great omens indicating incidents of life and death, war and peace, the inciting incidents or canon events of our stories. So for today, I'd also like to read something from a book by a great modern astrologer, Richard Tarnas. If you're into astrology, you probably know who he is. The book is called Cosmos and Psyche, and the passage here is about free will and determinism. Determinism is another way of saying fate. And this is one of the great astrological debates. I've spoke about it before in other episodes, and perhaps on the Patreon. Eclipses can bring anxiety, fatigue, fear, and also doubt. From even astrologers are like, is this really what I should be like spending my energy worrying about or thinking about or plotting about? You know, even this extra effort I put into this episode, I'm like, nothing could happen, you know? But it's important to remember that at a new moon, the seeds are being planted. So you may not see the fruits of that until the full moon. So what you're looking for in a solar eclipse is you're at the starting line. And it might not be that the gun goes off necessarily. You may not understand or know what's being put into motion right away. So in a new moon, we're thinking about how we feel. We're going inward. It's dark, right? It's going to be dark in the middle of the day. That's going to be strange. Might be a really great time to do a reading or sit outside with it and just, you know, I would say meditate, but I'm not really a meditator. I do my meditating in other ways. But we may not understand until later, and that's a lot of times what can happen with astrology as well. But I wanted to read this passage, that kind of explains, you know, what's the big deal? Why should we care about eclipses, but also about astrology itself? Because this may be a good time to reflect on that. So, this won't take super long. It's about 2 paragraphs. Bear with me. Free will and determinism. There is no question that a substantial part of the Western astrological tradition supported a relatively deterministic interpretation of cosmic influence, a tendency even more marked in Indian astrology. For numerous schools and theorists of ancient and medieval astrology, the horoscope revealed a person's destined fate, and the celestial powers governed human lives with a more or less rigid sovereignty. The widespread reemergence of Western astrology in the course of the 20th century, however, arising in a new context and at a different stage in the West's culture and psychological evolution, brought with it a deeply transformed vision of both the human self and the nature of astrological prediction. The most characteristic attitude among contemporary astrologers holds astrological knowledge to be ultimately emancipatory rather than constricting, bringing a potential increase of personal freedom and fulfillment through an enlarged understanding of the self and its cosmic context. Side note, I can attest to this, and probably a lot of you can too. In this view, knowing the basic archetypal dynamics and patterns of meaning in one's birth chart allows one to bring greater awareness to the task fulfilling one's authentic nature and intrinsic potential. As in Jung's concept of individuation, the more accurately one understands the archetypal forces that inform and affect one's life, the more flexibly and intelligently responsive one can be in dealing with them. To the extent that one is unconscious of these potent and sometimes highly problematic forces, one is more or less a pawn of the archetypes, acting according to unconscious motivations with little possibility of being a cooperative participant in the unfolding and refining of these potentials. Archetypal awareness brings greater self-awareness and thus greater personal autonomy. So what they're talking about there is the influence of a symbolistic practice that plots things out as in points in time. You know, astrology can be viewed in a lot of different ways. Even if you view it as fate, you're still participating in it. There's still choices to be made. There's still free will. And understanding those things is part of the journey. Now, there's other points of view called... Stoicism would be one of the points of view where the goal is follow along and try and understand the things that are happening to us. Putting faith in the process, putting faith in the design as a whole, in that, you know, one ideal that can be problematic to some, which is that everything happens for a reason. That's kind of a way, kind of a Stoic point of view. It's also other points of view, but astrology can be viewed as a reflection point. When you work with your birth chart, it's personal. It's a lot like developing a relationship with a deck of cards. What does the Knight of Cups mean to you? What do you think of when that card is pulled? What do you think of? You can communicate that to other people. You can learn the words, learn the significations, and rattle them off. But having a relationship with that. You know, for myself, having a relationship with my Mars placement. What does that mean to me? How does that influence my life? How do I work with it? How do I see the drawbacks and the strengths of it and try and use it to understand myself more? All of that to say, the eclipse on April 8th may offer something profound. It may offer a point in time to notate when a change started. I'll tell one story before we end here. And it's the story of the solar eclipse on October 14th, which was the one this fall. It was a Libra solar eclipse. I am also a Libra rising, which means that this solar eclipse happened in my first house. That can signify great personal change, changes to my psychology, changes to my physical being, to my character in the story, rather than an external force acting upon me. This was maybe something that I would initiate, that I would do, or that would cause me to act in a way that was maybe different. In that moment, and on that day, one of my best friends was getting married. Long-awaited wedding, and I was in the wedding. And there was a complication. I won't get into the details, but there was a complication that caused my wife and daughter to be unable to come to the wedding, which was always the plan. You know, we went out and got dresses, and while it wasn't 100% my fault, it was 100% my responsibility, especially to my family. And you know, I tell you this because to illustrate the profoundness that eclipses can possibly have, and you can chalk it up to coincidence if you want, but this had a really big impact on me in my choices and what was I going to choose. It also so happened that this best friend was my employer, the friend that I referred to who owns the acoustics business, and I had to make a choice in that moment. You know, do I go to the wedding? Or do I go home with my family? You know, maybe there's a way that everybody can be happy. And what I ended up deciding to do was staying at the wedding as long as I could, fulfilling what duties I had, and then leaving. Honestly, as soon as possible. And when I tell you I raced home, I raced. I even ran into traffic. It was raining. It was hectic. I can't even, you know, describe the urgency. And I just knew that I wanted to get home before my daughter went to sleep, so that I could see her and essentially apologize to her. And just knowing that, you know, the situation was one that I had created through lack of communication and a mistake that I had made. But all also just happening within me, within myself, the first house. Me, the main character in my story. And in that moment of choosing my family over my friend, my employer, you know, another really big person who's very important in my life, I made a choice to be loyal to my family. And it just so happens that right on the day of the next eclipse, which was the full moon eclipse in Libra, that was a couple weeks ago, was the day that Jackie started her new job and I started mine. And my new job just happens to be working remote for the same company. You know, we worked some things out. It was definitely a journey. But from that point to the next eclipse, which was a full moon, a lunar eclipse in Libra, I saw the fruits of it. And I have to say that was probably one of the more profound eclipses that I experienced. But because of that, I am aware and awakened to the profoundness that can come from an eclipse. And not every eclipse is the biggest moment in your life, but you never know. And the privilege that I have and that I feel to reflect on it using something like astrology or something like tarot is something that I'm very thankful for, because I think overall it allowed me time to step back, energy to step back and look at things through a different lens. So I hope that was enlightening to you all about eclipses, and I hope that story wasn't too oversharing. So thanks for sticking around for it. I know this episode is super long, but If you like this podcast, like and subscribe, check out the Patreon. Very soon we will have a forecast coming up. The forecast includes astrological transits that are happening this month and tarot readings that you can do on those days, written by myself and Jacqueline. So if you're interested in that, take a look at the Patreon and consider being a patron. Thanks a lot. We will see you next time.